Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Head over to youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the bell for notifications wherever you get, if you do that, because you're going to know whenever we upload a new piece of content, whether we go live or whatever you need. Check it out there, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. StuDoesMerch.com is the place to go to get your holiday gear and some good Christmas stuff. We got some Christmas-specific stuff up there. Want to check that out. Good gifts. STU10 is the code to get 10% off your entire order. Chuck Holton will be calling us shortly from overseas to discuss the latest in Syria. We're going to dive into Trump's first interview on NBC News here in just a second. But I want to start by doing the Daniel Penny verdict. And this is how it got announced to me from the Wall Street Journal. Quote, former Marine Daniel Penny was found not guilty of homicide in the choking of a homeless man on a New York City subway. So just like, guy just choked a random homeless guy? Like, that's, wow, it sounds terrible. I mean, now I understand it's a headline, so you don't get every detail in the story, but did we really need to know he was a former Marine? Like, was former Marine as worthy a detail of the homeless guy was threatening everyone on the subway train? Was that, I would have said maybe like Daniel Penny was found not guilty of homicide in the choking of a homeless man that was threatening other passengers on a subway train in New York City. Maybe that makes a little more, kind of an important detail to just leave out. The fact that he was a Marine is an interesting aside. I mean, it's probably why he was able to actually hold the guy down so competently. But at the end of the day, I think that's a minor detail when it comes to the entire scope of it. And this was not just the Wall Street Journal. This is NBC News New York. Daniel Penny found not guilty in Jordan Neely subway chokehold death. That's it. Like, no added detail. Nothing you want to add to that headline at all? I don't want to let anyone know anything else important right up top? Apparently not. Penny acquitted in Neely death, says the NYT headline. Look, I get that he is, I get that you're not going to fit everything in the headline. And I get that the news is never going to cover things the way that I want to. I've given up on that. I will say it was nice, though, to see that District Attorney Alvin Bragg continues like the worst year ever. Like, this guy has had a rough, rough go of it. In his statement on Monday, Mr. Bragg said that the jury has now spoken. We deeply respect the jury process and we respect the verdict. In a statement, Mr. Bragg also noted that prosecutors and their families were besieged with hate and threats on social media, by phone and over email. Simply put, this is unacceptable and everyone, no matter your opinion on the case, should condemn it. Of course, we do condemn that. 100%. Like, you shouldn't be threatening people. But let me give you another thing that I want to condemn, because I am really, really excited that Daniel Penny was able to get out of these charges. I think that's a real positive. However, it's not like the ideal situation. The ideal situation is that he hits a parade. The ideal situation is that he's never charged with a crime. And only in Alvin Bragg's New York would he be charged with a crime. Daniel Penny is a hero at the end of the day. He was able to protect a bunch of people on a train, one of which was shielding his baby behind the stroller because she was so concerned about what might happen to her baby, considering what this guy was doing on the train. And everybody who's ever lived in New York or ever worked in New York has had an experience where you're on a subway and some crazy person gets on and starts doing really wild, erratic things. The people on the train went out of their way to separate that type of incident from what Neely was doing, which was really legitimately threatening people, saying that he would go to prison for the rest of his life. He didn't care. And on and on and on and on and on and on. Daniel Penny stepping in is the thing that you would want your son to do. If you had a son in that situation, you would want him to do the same exact thing. Now, I understand at the end of the day, as Daniel Penny even said, I mean, he wasn't trying to kill the guy. And the fact that that happened is not a positive. It's a terrible outcome of the aggressive behavior by Neely and his drug use, likely. I mean, likely that's part of the reason why this occurred, and it probably wouldn't have occurred with you or I, assuming you're not on drugs. I know Jeffy watches the show sometimes, so I want to make sure I separate that out. The bottom line here is that Neely should not be treated like he was an enemy. He should never have been charged. And it kind of feels like it's another good moment, right? It feels like a we're so back moment where everyone's kind of like, wait a minute, maybe some of the stuff, all the stuff we've been dealing with over the past few years, maybe it's actually going away. Maybe this nonsense, this craziness is going away. Prosecutors like Bragg in other cities are getting wiped out in elections. Bragg seems to be in real trouble in his city. And what's so disgraceful about Bragg was not just that he charged Penny. It's all the people that he doesn't charge on a day-to-day basis. Real criminals that do real things that are objectionable, not like Penny, who stood up heroically to save white and black alike on a subway train in a really dangerous situation. And maybe that's like how I'm tying these two things together in my head, because it does sort of feel like with the Daniel Penny thing, maybe we're on the right side. Maybe we are waking up. Maybe we're on the right side. Maybe America's going to turn back to what it's supposedly always stood for, you know, justice. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the media is still going to get in the way in that. We could turn now and go to Trump's first interview, where he was interviewed by Kristen Welker on Meet the Press. Now, Meet the Press, I think, used to be sort of the standard thing you had to do as a president and go on and talk to Tim Russert back in the day. And then it was Chuck, he was on there for a while. Good old Chuck. And he's now gone. And now it's Kristen Welker, who did one of the debates, I think, if I remember right, or at least had some role in that. But is, you know, not someone that if you show me a picture of her face, I wouldn't have known who she was. But she did detail sweeping changes. He did detail sweeping changes with her that he will carry out on day one and beyond an exclusive interview with NBC News. President-elect Trump vowed to make immediate sweeping changes as he takes office on January 20th, such as pardons for those convicted in the attack on the U.S. Capitol, and said he wants to find a legislative solution to keep dreamers in the country legally. That's interesting. In an interview with Kristen Welker, the moderator of NBC News Meet the Press, Trump also said he'll work to extend the tax cuts passed in his first term. He said he will not seek to impose restrictions on abortion pills. Again, like, I guess he's reaching across the aisle with some of the stuff. I don't think necessarily we need legislation for dreamers, number one. Maybe if you were to completely solve the border problem first, you might have an argument for that. But that's not my first thing. Also, restrictions on abortion pills would be a really good thing for a pro-life president to do. Hopefully that one winds up coming in some form, whether it's just by the states or that he does something on that. He plans to deport millions of undocumented immigrants and try to end birthright citizenship. He said the pardons for January 6 rioters will happen on day one, arguing many have endured overly harsh treatment in prison. She also talked about 2020 and asked him about 2020. NBC's Welker tries to checkmate with the question when Trump refuses to concede election he lost to Biden. You tell me, is this a checkmate to Donald Trump? Here's the question on Meet the Press.
Sir, I don't have to tell you this because you've talked about it. It comes at a time when the country is deeply divided. And now you're going to be leading this country for the next 4 years. For the sake of unifying this country, will you concede the 2020 election and turn the page on that chapter?
No. No, why would I do that? But let me just tell you, when you say the country is deeply divided, I'm not the president. Joe Biden's the president.
But you're going to be the president.
No, no. I'm not the president. So when you say it's deeply divided, I agree. But Biden's the president. I'm not. And he has been a divider. And you know where he divided it more than anything else, and it probably backfired on him, I think definitely, is weaponization. When he weaponized the Justice Department and he went after his political opponent, me. He went after his political opponent violently because he knew he couldn't beat him. And I think it really was a bad thing. And it really divided our country.
Sir, Democrats have control of the White House now. They didn't in 2020. If they are going around stealing elections, why
when you
didn't
say
they
Democrats have control now
of the White House?
Yeah.
So why didn't they steal this election since they have more power now?
Because I think it was too big to rig.
Now, look, it's a fair question, frankly, when it comes to the 2020 election, because it really has nothing to do with the White House. The White House doesn't manage elections. But in the states that were contested most highly, a lot more Democrats are in power, right? I mean, Katie Hobbs is the governor of Arizona now. There's more Democratic control in Pennsylvania. There's more Democratic control in Wisconsin and in Michigan as well. So you think, okay, well, maybe they would have more power to steal elections. it's sort of a waste of time, right? This is more of just a viral moment for her and her friends. Like, there's no way he's going to be like, you know what? Yeah, I actually did lose in 2020 after saying the opposite for 4 years. That's never going to happen. Sort of a waste of a question. But I will say the too big to rig thing, which, you know, is more of a slogan than, you know, an argument, is, you know, look, if you're talking about changing numbers in an election, you can do that, I guess, to any degree that you would want to. I think it was something like 80,000 votes in a few states in 2016 was the determining factor. I think it was 40,000 in 2020. And I think it was like 200,000 in 2024. So it was bigger than those two previous elections. But I mean, I guess if you're just typing numbers into the computer, you know, Sidney Powell style, it wouldn't matter what the margin was. But regardless, I don't think that was the gotcha moment that she was looking for. Birthright citizenship was another one that came up. And this is something that Trump has talked about for a long time. He didn't do all that much when he was actually president to reverse this, other than just talk about it. He says he's going to come and try to do this now. And there's been a long time constitutional argument on the 14th Amendment, what it means and how it applies to the children of illegal immigrants. A very interesting back and forth here. And I would say this before, as I introduce this clip, pay particular attention to what Kristen Welker says when she's quoting the 14th Amendment. See if you can pick up what she does here. Watch.
You've promised to end birthright citizenship on day one. Is that still your plan?
Yeah, absolutely.
The 14th Amendment, though, says that, quote, all persons born in the United States are citizens. Can you get around the 14th Amendment with an executive action?
Well, we're going to have to get a change. We maybe have to go back to the people, but we have to end it. We're the only country that has it.
Through an executive action?
You know, we're the only country that has it. You know, if somebody sets a foot, just a foot, 1 foot, you don't need to, on our land, congratulations, you are now a citizen of the United States of America. Yes, we're going to end that because it's ridiculous.
Through executive action?
Well, if we can, through executive action. I was going to do it through executive action, but then we had to fix COVID first, to be honest with you. We have to end it.
So, again, he quite clearly at the beginning says we might need to get a change, meaning a change in the Constitution, essentially a revision, an amendment to the Constitution. He says we have to go to the people, which would include, you know, a potential amendment process. And then she keeps pressing him on the executive action. And he basically says, if we can. So they're going to look for a way to do it through the executive action. But I think he's pretty open that they probably will take a situation that is a constitutional amendment. However, there is disagreement on that, right? Like, this is something we've talked about many times on the show. When you're talking about the 14th Amendment, there is a disagreement on what it actually means. And if you heard what Kristen Welker said the 14th Amendment says, she said, this is her quote, quote, all persons born in the United States are citizens. Now, if you happen to be a constitutional scholar, you might notice the issue with that, which is that's not what the amendment actually says. The amendment actually says this: all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. So she took out or naturalized, which isn't all that important in this context. But the debate on the 14th Amendment rides on the phrase, quote, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And again, you know, sometimes the Constitution doesn't make it easy. What does it actually mean? There's several groups that have always been excluded from getting birthright citizenship. So if you come here, let's say you're a foreign dignitary. You come here and you have a child that is not an American citizen. If you are a foreign soldier, you have a baby on our soil that is not an American citizen. If you are in certain Native American tribes and you are outside of the jurisdiction of the United States, your child might not be a U.S. citizen. There is debate. So far, the courts have generally ruled that children of illegal immigrants do count as U.S. citizens. But the conservative pushback on that is specifically about the phrase that she just edited out. And it doesn't matter what your opinion is on the conservative 14th Amendment case. It doesn't matter what you think, who should win that and who shouldn't. The point is, if the entire debate revolves around that phrase, how can you edit it out when you're asking the question? I mean, it's media malpractice at the very least. And honestly, it's, I think, very clearly intentional trying to, because if you say that, well, I mean, if you come across into our country you do get some of the protections of the law and some of the privileges of the law. You're subject to some of those, but some of them you're not. Like, you can't, for example, vote. There's a bunch of different things you can't do these things don't apply to you. A lot of programs don't apply to you. You know, there's a lot. It's a much different situation. The equal protection part, you know, has its limits on that. And that's been kind of the argument forever. And the fact that you take that out during the interview is just very, very revealing. Also, they talked about Ukraine. Ukraine, this is pretty interesting with Ukraine, because I would say a lot of the people that I know who were really excited about a new Trump administration were pretty skeptical on the Ukraine funding coming from the government. And that's been a kind of a mixed issue overall when you look at the polling. For a long time, about half of Republicans were supportive of that funding. That's dropped off since. But Trump isn't exactly saying he's going to withdraw this funding. He's kind of still seemingly open to it, which is, I think, an interesting political development, and also one that just might just be a pragmatic part of being in this office at this particular time. Here they are talking about Ukraine.
There are people being killed in that war at levels that nobody's ever seen before. You have to go back to the Second World War, and even that, if you take a look at, and it, you know what it is? It's the soldiers, largely. The cities have been emptied out and demolished. The country has been demolished. If I won that election, which you know how I feel about it, I won't get into it because we don't need to start that argument. I think it's an easy argument. It was really proven even more conclusively by the win that I had on this one.
But you did
had
report,
I,
sir.
You well, that's your opinion, yeah, but okay. I disagree with it. Had I assumed, kept control, number one, Israel wouldn't have happened. Number two, Ukraine would have never happened. It would have never happened, Ukraine, Russia. But the number of people that are being killed, soldiers, young, beautiful soldiers, hundreds of thousands of people are being killed. And you know, it's very interesting. It's level, totally level. The battlefield's totally level. You know what's happening? Yeah. The only thing that stops a bullet, you know what it is a body, a human body. And the people that are being killed, hundreds of thousands on both sides. Russia's lost probably 500,000. Ukraine's lost higher than they say, probably 400,000. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of bodies laying all over fields. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen, and it should have never been allowed to happen. Biden should have been able to stop it.
I think it's pretty clear that this would have turned out differently, and many of these situations would have turned out differently if Joe Biden was not in office. Certainly Afghanistan would not have happened the way it did. And I think there's a good chance that Trump could have talked to Putin and maybe dissuaded him from doing this. Who knows? We'll never know. I will say he did talk about the funding, and he said, exclusive interview with Donald Trump on Meet the Press, he said that Ukraine will possibly receive less military aid once he takes office. He went on to complain about that the U.S. had provided more aid than Europe had, but he doesn't say he's just going to go in and cut it off right away. And I think that is interesting. I think in opposition to a lot of the people that I talked to who were very excited about Trump getting in there for that reason. Certainly J.D. Vance has been incredibly clear that he wants no more money going there. Trump has not been exactly as clear. I mean, he said if there was not a deal made because Vladimir Putin didn't go into it, he would put more weapons in to Ukraine than anyone had ever seen. Now, you know, he talks that way, and a lot of this is negotiation, so we don't know exactly where this is going to land. My guess is the entire funding does not end on day one, like a lot of maybe his supporters and voters were hoping for, but a ramp down is a more gradual ramp down is pretty darn likely. At least that's what I believe. Finally, I want to give into his vision for the future. What, you know, when it comes to his retribution against his political enemies, which, by the way, every day is getting a little bit looser with the facts when it comes to the media. They were saying for a while it was like he was going to put people in prison. He was accusing of treason. Then it was he's going to put his political enemies in prison. Then it was he's just going to put his enemies in prison. Then it was his opponents in prison. The other day I heard his critics. He's got everyone who's critical of Donald Trump. I mean, gosh, it's going to be you're going to need to build some big prisons for that one. They just keep loosening this. Well, who he's going to put into prison. He did talk about that a little bit, you know, talk about people like Liz Cheney. He said, you know, anyone who did anything on that commission should be put in jail. They said, are you going to go do that yourself? Are you going to make sure your DOJ person goes and does that? And he said, no, he's just going to leave it up to them, though he believes that they will go and go after some of those people. But here he is talking about retribution.
I'm really looking to make our country successful. I'm not looking to go back into the past. I'm looking to make our country successful. Retribution will be through success. If we can make our success, this country successful, that would be my greatest, that would be such a great achievement. Bring it back. We have a country now that's overridden with crime, that has millions of people that shouldn't be here, that should be in prisons in other countries, that should be in mental institutions. We have drug lords being dropped into our country and told never go back to their country. I'm looking to make our country great. I'm looking to get bring prices down because, you know, I won on two things, the border and more than immigration. You know, they like to say immigration. I break it down more to the border, but I won on the border and I won on groceries. It's a very simple word, groceries.
It is a, it's a very simple word, groceries. I think it's largely true, right? Like the fact that he applied the border, groceries just meaning, he's a very simple word, groceries, true, but also like not just groceries, right? It was the cost of living for the everyday person. It was their quality of life. The fact that they felt things were not affordable or attainable for them anymore. The fact that the economy felt so out of reach, a positive outcome in the economy, really did wind up pushing him over the edge. And again, in an election that still was relatively a close one. So there you go. That is the Donald Trump interview from Meet the Press. I will also say, do we really need to do these? Does Meet the Press deserve these interviews anymore? I mean, I feel like they just get them automatically because Meet the Press is a big name. Tim Russert's not on the show anymore. I think it's time that we maybe move on from this. I don't even know who she is. Does anyone know who Kristen Welker is? I don't know. I certainly don't. I know who Chuck Holton is, though, and you're going to know him, too. If you don't already, he's going to join us next. You heard me talk about Hillsdale College and the more than 40 free online courses they offer on history and economics and politics and philosophy and so much more. But this holiday season, I want to direct you to Hillsdale's free college on Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol. The best authors teach us to see the world in different ways, and the stuff that is lost in our busy daily lives is kind of a big focus on that. So you can join Hillsdale professor Dwight Lindley as he leads you through the mysterious world of Ebenezer Scrooge, Bob Cratchit, Jacob Marley, the ghosts of Christmas, and Tiny Tim, all characters we've heard so much about. But really have so much to show us. And this course is only 6 episodes long. It's 30 minutes, like a half hour each. You can watch, you can listen to them at your own pace. You can explore the true meaning of Christmas with Ebenezer Scrooge and his journey from sin to redemption, and to join Tiny Tim in saying, God bless us, everyone. Go to hillsdale.edu/stew. hillsdale.edu/stew. You can enroll right now. There's no cost. This is free to you. It's a great service, and it's easy to get started. Check it out now, hillsdale.edu/stew, hillsdale.edu/stew, to register.
Für alle ein Fest zum Aldi-Tiefpreis. Diese Woche Gourmet-Dessert-Törtchen. 6x30 Gramm für nur 2,89 Euro. Oder Gourmet-Frischkäse-Gipfel. 90 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke viele weitere festliche Angebote. Jetzt bei Aldi Nord. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I want to bring in Chuck Holton, war correspondent and host of The Hot Zone with Chuck Holton. Chuck, I feel like a lot of people around the world, I could say, where in the world are you? And it would just be like a joke. For you, I really have to ask, where in the world are you?
I just left Kharkiv. We were on the front lines in Ukraine today, out with some of the troops, and just to the east of Kramatorsk. And so I'm making my way back to Kyiv now, kind of a long road trip tonight.
Well, considering where you are, and I can, you know, I can tell your voice is a little bit strained at this point. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's a lot to ask, but I mean, these are pretty major developments we're seeing all around the world, and Syria is kind of maybe an incredible story from really over the past week. Syrian the prime minister says the government is still functioning, but foreign and domestic challenges loom. Can you kind of Walk us through how we got here, because I think my impression, and I think most people's impression of what was happening in Syria, was there was this real chance that Assad was going to be overthrown a decade or so ago. And then that seemed to kind of dissolve. And all of a sudden, over the past few weeks, that entire situation has changed.
Right. So there have been four teams that have been like fighting over Syria for 10 years. OK, and so I'll lay them out for you. And each of them has kind of a major player and a minor player. All right. Everybody has been trying to project power into that region. First of all, you have the Syrian government under Bashar al-Assad. And the only reason that they've been propped up until this time is because they were getting a lot of help from Russia. OK, so that was their team. Then when ISIS took over most of Syria in 2014, and much of northern Iraq, they were countered by the Kurds, who fought back and pushed the ISIS all the way back until they finally wiped them out. They squeezed them between the Syrian forces and the Kurdish forces in about 2019, I guess, 2017 to 2019, and finally knocked them off right around Deir ez-Zor, in right on the Euphrates River there. The Kurds lost like 12,000 troops doing that. And they were backed and have been backed and are backed by the United States. So that's their team. And the Kurds have kept the one third of Syria that they took over from ISIS. And they would love to make that their own country. They call it Rojava now. And now they're looking to expand their holdings as well. On top of that, you have Turkey, who actually was supporting ISIS. And when ISIS was destroyed, a lot of the fighters that were fighting for ISIS sort of switched their uniforms overnight and became Turkish, either soldiers or what they call the Free Syrian Army, the FSA, backed by Turkey, became sort of a United Nations of ISIS. Okay. And then you have Iran and the network of PMUs or Iranian-backed militias called the Hashabi that was, you know, it's a Shiite presence in Syria that was trying to connect with Hezbollah. And they had Hezbollah elements there too, and trying to create what they called the Iranian Crescent from Tehran to Beirut, where they could move weapons more easily across Syria into, you know, into Lebanon. So that's the fourth team, or the third team, you know, Turkey. Then on top of that, you know, there were like 200 different rebel groups. And finally, all those rebel groups coalesced, and they were being just bombed to smithereens by the Russians and the Syrians in the Idlib area. But they've been putting together a plan now, apparently, according to some reports, for like 6 months. And they got it approved by Turkey to try to push out Bashar al-Assad. So with the support of Turkey, and after Hezbollah and the Hashashabi have been, and Iran have been terribly degraded by the Israelis, they decided this was the time to strike. And they pushed into that, you know, region that was controlled by Bashar al-Assad's forces, and found out that most of those forces, because Russia has been degraded in Ukraine and Hezbollah has been degraded in Iran by Israel, this is a perfect time for them to strike. And everything collapsed, and they took it over in like 12 days.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely there were echoes to me of what happened with the Afghan National Army, where, you know, there's just sort of this collapse one day when they were actually challenged. They didn't stay and fight. A lot of people here are talking about, you know, people who are maybe hawkish on Ukraine are kind of praising this as an outcome of it, right? We've weakened Russia. Israel has weakened Hezbollah. And as you mentioned, I mean, that's the reason why they didn't have Assad did not have that pushback. Is that something that, you know, we should be taking credit for? I mean, is this something that we're going to look back on and need blame for? Is this a good move with Assad leaving? It's hard to know who to root for with all these groups.
It is. And it's hard to be sad that Bashar al-Assad, who ruled Syria since 2000, so, you know, 24 years, and then under his father, who was arguably worse than he was since 1973 or whatever, it's hard to be sad that they're gone. There are a lot of people very happy that they're gone, and we're seeing large groups of people moving from Turkey back into Syria now. That no longer feel like they need to be refugees from their country. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. However, the groups that took over for Bashar al-Assad might actually be worse in the long run. Now, right now, the leader of this HTS, this conglomeration of rebel groups, is saying all kinds of nice things about freedom and democracy and tolerance and things like that. But you have to remember, that's exactly what the Taliban said when we had that disastrous pullout in the first year of the Biden administration. And that turned out not so well in Afghanistan. So these guys are, if anything, more extremist than the Bashar al-Assad government was, or at least they were. These are people that were elements of Al-Qaeda, even elements of ISIS, who are now, in control of two-thirds of Syria. The Syrian Democratic Forces, or the Kurdish army, backed by the United States, still controls the eastern one-third of Syria and may actually be able to expand that some now. But this has given Turkey a green light to push into the north of Syria and really start fighting the Kurds. And so as the United States backs the Kurds, what we may actually find ourselves doing is going up against our NATO ally, Turkey, in that region. And unfortunately, during the first Trump administration, we had more troops that were arrayed along the northern border of Syria to keep Turkey from pushing into Syria and doing just what they're doing now. But Donald Trump pulled those troops out. And so that sort of calming influence of U.S. troops up there is not there anymore. And we may see a problem from that. So this is definitely going to be interesting, and I'm not sure we should be celebrating necessarily. Israel certainly is not. Israel says they're, not they do not want a Sunni Muslim caliphate reestablishing itself in Syria, because that's exactly what ISIS was just a few years ago.
Mm. It really is difficult to figure out who to root for in this situation. Last one, Chuck.
I think the Kurds probably is the best we can do.
Yes, that definitely. It seems like that was the case in Iraq as well. Can we quickly talk about the Israel part of this? Last one here for you, Chuck, which is they are moving troops into this demilitarized zone with Syria. People are acting like they're just grabbing territory. I mean, it doesn't seem like that's actually the truth. What's going on with the troops moving in from Israel?
Yeah, that's right. They're not actually grabbing territory per se. I mean, before all this happened, you or I could have rented a car and driven into the area where the IDF troops are now. And most of the area, they've taken some ground in the town of Quneitra, which has actually been a thorn in Israel's side for some time, because some of these disparate rebel groups have been coming down to Quneitra and firing rockets and drones and mortars and stuff into the Golan Heights from Quneitra. So there is, you have to remember, there's a UN peacekeeping force that's in Quneitra and has been there since the 1970s or 80s, called UNDOF. And they're every bit as worthless as UNIFIL has been in Lebanon and as UNRWA has been in Gaza. And those guys are supposed to keep those rebel groups from threatening Israel, and they haven't. They haven't done a thing about it. And I've been there even years ago reporting on this. So this move by Israel is just an attempt to create that safe space for Israel so that their people can live in peace in northern Golan Heights, where they have every right to live. And that's that. There's also a very important area on top of Mount Hermon that is right on the border of Syria and Israel. And there was there's some very important, you know, antennas and things arrayed up there. And Israel has pushed over the summit to sort of create a buffer zone around that and keep anybody from attacking that. But all in all, that's not a threat to Syria, really. It's just Israel creating some safe space, a buffer zone for themselves.
Certainly much needed. Chuck Holton, be sure to catch him on the Hot Zone with Chuck Holton. Also did some great coverage on CBN's YouTube channel. Chuck, thanks so much for coming back on the program. I appreciate it. I want to say thanks again to Chuck Holton for joining us from Ukraine in the back of a vehicle driving through a war zone. Always appreciative of someone going out of their way like that. And I will say what's interesting, too, is thanks a lot to Elon Musk because he was coming to us on Starlink, not a commercial for Starlink. But what an amazing technology. What an amazing company that, you know, you have now internet that's able to hold a broadcast interview for what, 12 minutes or whatever that was with Chuck. Just an incredible time to be alive. It really is. All those satellites up there doing lots of good work. So thank you to both Chuck and Starlink. There are developments in the story around the shooting of the healthcare CEO, United Healthcare CEO. Police are questioning a man in Altoona, Pennsylvania, in connection with that fatal shooting. This is how this day kind of started. They found him with fake IDs and a suppressor, and then later on they have arrested now a strong person of interest in the healthcare CEO's killing. His name, Luigi Mangione, arrested in Altoona. Kind of an interesting character. They are saying that it could have been a ghost gun. We will see if that winds up being true. A lot of times, initial reporting, not necessarily true in stories like that. He was carrying a handwritten manifesto. Criticized healthcare companies for putting profits above care, according to two law enforcement officials. We may need to do a segment this week on the actual realities of our healthcare system, because it seems like everybody on social media hates their healthcare and thinks that healthcare CEOs should be assassinated for the job that they do. Kind of strange, considering when you look at what people actually think about their healthcare, they're actually pretty happy with it. You know, and a lot of people over in other countries maybe not so happy with it. So anyway, there you go. Also, on social media, a man named Luigi Mangione posted pictures of his travels with friends and family. A person with the same name attended a private school in the Baltimore area where he wrestled and became a valedictorian and graduated from the University of Pennsylvania in 2020 with degrees in engineering, according to a school commencement program. Now, it's unlikely that the New York Times would be putting that information in the story if they didn't believe. They're not just like, hey, here's one guy named Luigi. Could be him. They obviously think that this is the guy. Fascinating, though, like you've got the ghost gun thing, which the left has been talking about all the time with evil right wing criminals. And then you see who potentially actually used the ghost gun, who's the actual murderer here. Yet again, another spoiled white liberal who's mad at companies. He is in custody on local charges, potentially just related to presenting that fake identification to the police. He has not been arrested for the killing yet. We will see if that winds up happening. But that's where we stand with that. And I know it's disappointing to many of you out there on the left, but it looks like the guy who actually committed the crime is in custody. Anytime in life that you have to make a big change, it's hard. And this is especially true when you're trying to buy or sell a home. It's complicated. It takes a lot of time and a lot of jumping through hoops as well. And of course, the stakes are just about as high as they ever get in your entire life when it comes to financial decisions that you can make. So obviously, you need to get a real estate agent that can help you with all of this. But you don't just want someone. You don't just want some ordinary agent who is just kind of doing things on the side. You want the best. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is the place to go to find the best. They pair you with the top selling real estate agents in your area. Someone who can, you know who knows the best practices, someone who kind of understands the housing market, someone who's a team leader and a closer, someone you can trust. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home or both, please get in touch with them. You'll see what I mean. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. The name says it all. Realestateagentsitrust.com, a free service to you. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. So the big free agent acquisition in Major League Baseball, Juan Soto, has been signed for the New York Mets, which is being talked about as a 15-year, $765 million contract. Already, Shohei Ohtani looks like a massive bargain. What was he, 10 years, $700 million, but a lot of that money was deferred. I mean, he's pitching, he's hitting, he's doing everything. I mean, Soto is now going to be this is the biggest contract ever signed by anyone in professional sports. It is a massive, massive amount of money. And if you think that's a lot of money, first of all, he had other offers. Yankees offered him 16 years, $760 million. The Red Sox, 15 years, $700 million. I know the Blue Jays and the Dodgers were in on it as well. I, as a Blue Jays fan, was, of course, hoping he'd land Juan Soto. He's pretty good, but also happy he's out of the division. No longer on the Yankees. I'm thrilled about that. Yankee pain to me, pretty good. It's almost as good as Cowboy pain. Not quite as good, but almost as good. It's actually worse than that, though, because $765 million. We did a whole show, I think, on Shohei Ohtani's contract. This is $765. It's actually worse than that, though, because Soto has an opt-out after 5 years of this contract. So he gets to go for 5 years. If he feels like he can earn more on the free agent market, he could just cancel the contract and go out and earn more. Unless the Yankees or the Mets come with even more money, it is a $75 million signing bonus. And if he opts out, they have to raise the annual average by about $5 million a year. So he would, the actual total is somewhere around $855 million total over the 15 years, which, again, is not bad. Now, the Yankees, as I said, I'm not a big Yankees fan, and I was just kind of busted on them. But to make peace, I will come on board 10 years, $300 million right now. That is my offer to the Yankees. Any amount of years at that rate, any amount of years at any rate, probably come on and check it out. I mean, I might sabotage you, particularly against the Blue Jays. I might even strike out several times. You might notice, and you might think, is this guy sabotaging us? No, I'm just not a good player. But we'll see if that pans out. It's an incredible amount of money, though. I mean, we are not that far away from a billion-dollar contract. Think about that. We are not that far away. I mean, I would assume it's going to come in baseball because you can get up to 15 years. If basketball has limits of, you know, five or six years and the Supermax deals. Football is nowhere even close on the money. It's baseball. Baseball, as long as they keep this system where you can just get a really rich guy, Steve Cohen, who's worth 80-something billion dollars, and he comes in and he's like, $765 million, I won't even notice it. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. He was not going to lose a bidding war with anybody, and that's exactly what happened. The good thing is the Yankees are the one that get hurt in that situation. So I'm positive on that, at least that part of it. All right, back in a second. Okay, so here's what happened. Remember the Romans? Pretty good in the battlefield. Remember that? Won lots of battles, lots of wars, got lots of territory. They were pretty impressive back in the day, but how were they that impressive? How did the barbarians of the Roman time become so successful in battle? They wound up beating people. Sometimes, you know, a lot of them were very large, but even people that were even larger, they wound up winning over and over again in some circumstances. Not all. It's important to note. But what do we think now is the situation? Well, scientists have come up with a solution. Roman-era barbarians snorted stimulants in the battle. And why do they think this? Tiny spoons. They found like 200 tiny spoons that look kind of like this. They're like, honestly, it's funny because looking at this, we did a segment on Wonderful World of Stew years ago on the Stewseum, which was, we would come up with random products that interest me and like very much lesser form of Glenn's Museum. And the Stewseum had a McDonald's spoon like this, which was the initial stirrer for your coffee. But people kept taking them and doing coke out of them. So I will say it's a little unfair. Maybe the Romans were just drinking lots of coffee, you know? Maybe they're using non-dairy creamer or something.